They were no one of real consequence as far as the measures of early 20th century society anyway. Young women, some no more than 15 years old, garment workers, mostly immigrants, some with a tenuous grasp of English, making pennies a day. And on March 25th, 1911, a fire broke out on the top floors of the Ash Building in New York City, where hundreds of these women sewed shirt waists for the Triangle Company within 18 minutes. Nearly 150 of them had died in the flames, leaving only the memories of the survivors, the witnesses, and the families that they left behind.
Fanny, in her role as supervisor, tried to usher as many people as she could into the elevator. She remained the sort of beacon of calmness while there was so much panic going on around her. She put all of the girls' well-being and safety ahead of her own. She fully expected for the elevator to come back and get her. It had already made 8 or 9 trips, and it was not possible.
That's Erica Lanzner describing how her great-aunt Fanny Lanzner died in the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire. Her aunt was one of those 146 people who died in the sweatshop flames 100 years ago this month, and it actually helped to launch the modern worker safety rights movement. Erica is one of many voices you hear in the new documentary, Triangle, Remember the Fire. It premieres Monday on HBO. With us is the film's director and writer, Daphne Pinkerton. She joins us in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Lee Benin is here. Benin?
Yes.
His grandmother's cousin Rose died in the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire. You're in the documentary. Maybe, you know, I think that a lot of people kind of have a vague memory of the Triangle Shirtwaist fire from maybe an essay question they had to ask during their high school history class. But Daphne, maybe you can remind us exactly what caused this fire and why it became so important.
Well, what literally caused it was, they think, a discarded cigarette. But ultimately what caused it is that government at the time didn't enforce regulations that would cost business money. There were safety precautions that existed at the time. Sprinklers existed. Fire drills were in widespread use in the public school system. The factory owners had been warned that it was too crowded, that the workers would panic if there was a fire. So the cause was really negligence on the part of government and the owners. And there had been an uprising about a year and a half earlier where 20,000 shirtwaist workers went on strike, mostly young immigrant women, at a time that they didn't even have the vote. And they'd been asking for better conditions. And about three-quarters of the factories recognized the union, but the Triangle owners did not, and they went back to work, and it was business as usual until the day of the fire.
Lee Benin, your family is involved in this, and of course you wrote a book, New York City's Triangle Factory Fire, chronicling the story of your grandmother's cousin Rose, right?
Yes.
This was a new world in the late 1800s and early part of the 20th century, these skyscrapers with elevators and these sorts of working environments. How unfamiliar a landscape was this sweatshop of the Triangle Company?
Well, the Triangle Company was in what would have been considered one of the more modern establishments. This was a skyscraper, a fireproof building, ironically. And probably a lot of people thought it was one of the better places to work.
So it was an illusion of modernity that actually was a death trap.
Absolutely, because they crowded too many people in the space and didn't have enough exits, didn't have sprinklers, didn't have fire drills.
And Daphne, what came out of this horrific event? And part of the horror of it was that so many people witnessed it, that this was something happening before their eyes. And some people, some of these young women jumped to their deaths rather than die in flames, was that it led to some incredible changes. I mean, just in New York alone, there were 36 new laws passed having to deal with worker safety because of this fire. I mean, can we even kind of gauge at this point the impact that this fire had on the labor movement?
Well, really, all those changes that happened afterwards paved the way for the New Deal, which gave working people the opportunity to have a middle class existence and then send their children on to a better life, like to become Supreme Court justices.
And Lee, I think that many people often, if they remember the Triangle Fire at all, it kind of seems like it's part of a you know, a completely different world. That's 100 years ago. That's so far from where we are. I mean, and yet we still have reports coming out of the U.S. Department of Labor that we still have sweatshops, that the garment industry still has terrible working conditions for some people here in the United States. So what your grandmother's cousin went through is not necessarily completely removed from our experience today.
Well, not at all. As a matter of fact, in large measure, the garment manufacturing has been exported abroad, and the same kinds of fires occur there. But even in this country, as everyone knows from British Petroleum and Massey Energy, people are dying in industrial accidents all the time. And now there are proposals to cut back funding for OSHA, which means that there won't be inspectors to enforce the safety regulations that actually exist.
Lee, how did you first learn about your family's involvement in this disaster?
Oh, my dear grandmother, may she rest in peace, told me when I was a child. My cousin Rose died in the Triangle Fire. She always had a deep sadness in her voice when she mentioned it, a tear in her eye, and she would just be silent for a moment and say, "What can you do?"
Daphne Pinkerson, your film, it's called Triangle, Remember the Fire. It premieres Monday on HBO. It kind of, I mean, I'm sure you've been working on it for some time now, and yet it's coming at this interesting moment in history where we're yet again having a national dialogue about workers' rights, about the labor movement, and about the sort of relevance of unions and collectives to the dialogue about business.
It is amazing. I mean, during the course of production, the Massey mining disaster happened and the Deepwater Horizon, and we couldn't believe that the same thing was happening. I mean, cutting corners, lax regulation, you know, cutting corners to drive production forward. And the Wisconsin standoff happened after we completed production, but it is pretty amazing and timely, that's for sure.
All right. The film is called Triangle, Remember the Fire. It premieres Monday on HBO. Daphne Pinkerson is the film's director and writer, and Lee Benin is also here. He speaks in the film. His grandmother's cousin Rose died in the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire. He also wrote the book New York City Triangle Factory Fire. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
On Lee's face, he can still see his grandmother telling him the story of what happened to Rose. All this morning, we're looking for questions you have on the latest, of course, in the tragedy in Japan. We're answering them online and on the air, so send them our way. We'll try to help you out, 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can check out more at thetakeaway.org. And go to our website where you can hear one of our interviews on the South by Southwest Festival getting going. We have a special interview with comedian Tig Notaro. She talks about the pressures of performing this weekend at such a high-profile festival at thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.